Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
This hour is brought to you by Vasectomy Clinics of Chicago.
Here it comes. Drive to left. Grand slam time.
Len Casper.
That's Len.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, baby.
TV voice of the Cubs.
Hey, one other question about Chewbacca.
Yeah.
Does he still qualify for the Wookiee of the Year?
Slightly above average bassist.
Len Casper playing a guitar, really into it.
Len Casper.
That's Len.
With Bernstein and McKnight on the Score.
Top of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Nothing beats championship hockey, and your Chicago Wolves have advanced to the Calder Cup Finals. The Wolves will host Charlotte next week for games 3, 4, and 5 at Allstate Arena. For playoff and ticket information, visit ChicagoWolves.com. Len Casper's on Twitter, at Len Casper. He joins us on the Al Pamonte Ford Hotline. Al Pamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. Len, how are you?
Hey, guys. Doing fine from St. Louis. A rare off day. First one in the last 17.
Yeah, poor Chris Bryant is actually going to have to find something to do in St. Louis
today.
I suggest the City Museum, which is actually a wonderful time if you have not been. And this is going to sound weird because obviously everybody is thinking about the little girl that was hit by Elmora last night. But I mean it when I ask Len, you know, how are you? Because everybody that was seeing that had to work through that was in an extraordinary circumstance.
It was a tough one. You know, the entire ballpark went silent. The reaction of Albert was really had everyone shaken, I think. And you just – baseball is the last thing you're thinking about or resuming the game when that thing happens. And it was very scary, very scary. It sounds like, you know, the initial reports – That I've heard have been positive, and I hope that continues because that could have been really, really bad.
Yeah, I have to tell you, I was shaken by Elmora's response. I mean, you saw all of it. All we saw was the center field camera take there and what was happening in front of the plate. And as I mentioned early in the show to Connor, that's a cinematic technique of showing the reaction. It's, you know, in thrillers or horror movies where you allow the viewer's imagination to create something so awful that the viewer scares himself or herself based on merely the reaction shot. And I didn't know what to picture, you know, and it was just, my mind was racing. I just thought it could be so horrible.
Yeah, and I saw the ball go into the stands, but it's really tough to see exactly what happened. There were no details to give, and my general thought, especially in a spot like that, is if I don't have anything to add, then don't say anything. And I thought Dave Turner, who directed the game last night, kind of took over at that point. The ballpark, as I said, fell silent, and he had many shots of the reaction of the players on the field. And I didn't know how long it would be before we resumed, but I think we were all shell-shocked is the right word. And, yeah, it's just one of those very scary moments. I think some fans, you know, wanted some more details from us, but I don't feel – I just think it's a very sensitive situation, and I without any sort of official – updates or word from the ball club, I don't feel comfortable giving an update on the air, especially, you know, from a Reddit comment or
right.
something yeah. like that. That to me is not really our job, and I don't want to give out information that could down the road be viewed as wrong, quite frankly.
Yeah. I'm wondering, you know, this team, as it's been together pretty much intact the last handful of years, has a couple of relationships that run differently than others. You saw Jason Hayward come out and talk to Albert Elmora. You saw Joe come out and do it. It seems, I don't know, in a weird way that they're maybe uniquely equipped to understand the emotion that Al Morrow or anybody else on that team would have gone through in the moment, having seen what he saw.
Yeah, they're all very close. And, you know, Albert, I've gotten to know pretty well, is just a compassionate, kind, sweet human being. And I give him credit for getting through the rest of the game. You know, when he struck out, I don't think anyone was surprised that bat at bat ended the way it did. But then he went back into the dugout, and then about an inning later, I think he got the update from a security guard near third base, and he gave her a big hug. And it was just an incredibly emotional night. And, you know, the fact that those two teams were able to somehow compartmentalize what happened and move on, it's not easy to do. And I think players on both sides after the game still felt a little bit like this game really didn't mean a whole lot. And I kind of felt that way, too. It really did change the tone and the tenor of the game the rest of the night.
As we speak, I'm looking up at one of the screens here in the studio, and it was Channel 2 News WBBM is leading with a story about the possibility of further extended netting. They're getting the helicopter shots of the current netting at Wrigley Field. The reporters stand up in front of the marquee discussing that. Jed Hoyer was just on earlier saying he would be for extended netting, but a lawyer let us know, Len, that no team is going to unilaterally be the first to just say, yep, we're doing foul pole to foul pole, because of what that then would do to the legal liability of every team that doesn't do it. Essentially, legally, we are told, if one team does it, all teams would then immediately have to do it to comply with a legal standard that would rid them of a negligence claim.
Yeah, it's an interesting conversation. You know, we've gotten to the point where the nets now go to the end of the dugouts. Base coaches have to wear helmets. Can you even imagine? I was thinking about this a few weeks ago. I don't know why. My mind is weird. I might have been talking to one of our base coaches, but can you even imagine? It wasn't even a decade ago where base coaches had caps, soft caps on. Right? It just sounds so foreign to us now because we're used to the idea that you have to wear a helmet if you're a major league base coach. I often, when I watch, especially Javier Baez, he kind of tries to stand as close to home plate as he can in the on-deck circle. And when he's at the third base side and it's a left-handed batter in front of him, like Rizzo, it makes me a little queasy. These are professional players, but, you know, he's standing maybe 30 feet away from home plate, and a foul ball could very easily hit him in a very bad spot. So I worry about all that stuff, even when it comes to the on-field personnel. Mm-hmm. Then you go beyond that with the fans, and I can't argue with the idea of a net going all the way to the foul pole. I think they do it in Japan.
They do.
I think we're probably headed that way eventually. It's just a matter of when, not if. I think you have to determine how high you want the nets to be. If I'm being totally honest, you know, I do get, as a TV announcer, sometimes I don't like the shots through the net. You have these big HD screens at home, and you're looking through guy wires and backstop netting on a ground ball to the second baseman. But that's kind of a minor concession, I think, when it comes to fan safety. So ultimately, I am all for making fans as safe as possible at the ballpark. And the other part of this, too, is, you know, some fans are criticized for being on their phones and not paying attention. I don't think that's the right way to look at it, because even if you are paying attention, you still can't get out of the way. And if the person in front of you does, and you're behind that person, you have nowhere to go, even if you're watching.
It just seems to me, Len, that I'm with you. The nets ought to go all the way down to the foul poles. I don't think much is going to stop that. It's just a matter of when. We're in the midst of a lot of conversation about how this game is going to change actually, how the game itself may get altered, putting a man on second and extra innings and all this other stuff, and yet some are still reticent to the idea of changing the aesthetic of it when the repercussions of that are just protecting fans. It seems, I don't know, it just doesn't square. Like, the cogs don't mesh in that part of the discussion.
Well, baseball, more than any other sport, in my opinion, you have always major pushback whenever you want to make even the smallest change to the game. And I understand that. And as someone who often kind of reverts to 12-year-old Len Casper and kind of the way I viewed the world and the game when I was a kid. I totally understand that. And there are some things about the changes when they're made that I worry about, that you are going to fundamentally change it. Having said that, you know, I grew up a big hockey fan. I used to go down to Saginaw, Michigan and watch the old IHL games. And we'd have a group of high school kids and we'd sit behind the goal and we'd be, you know, six or seven rows up above the glass. There was no netting. And we got several pucks that were hit over the glass. And, you know, God forbid if someone had ever been hit by one. And, you know, the tragic situation in Columbus a few years ago that ultimately had all the NHL teams put up netting behind the glass behind the goals. You know, times change. Players are faster, bigger, stronger. The pucks, the balls, everything gets into, you know, bats. Those things fly, those projectiles end up flying a lot more than they did when we were younger, and you just have to adjust to the times in terms of safety. So I'm okay with all the changes that way, and I think, as I said, it's just a matter of time before we do more to protect fans who pay a lot of money to come to the ballpark to be safe.
Having been to Saginaw, Michigan, I'd say, well, more power to you if you want to, and actually chose to go to Saginaw. Wow, that place.
Oh yeah. Well, the Blackhawks affiliate was there, and when Eddie Belfour and that group, a lot of those players went through Saginaw. So there were some really good teams in the mid to late 80s that played in Saginaw, and I'm such a hockey nut. Uh-huh. I loved every minute of it.
Now you can go to watch the Muskegon Fury. You could go to Kalamazoo and see the K-Wings. There's all kinds of stuff for you.
Yeah, Flint Generals. Yeah, it was fun.
Now, Kyle Hendricks was brilliant once again. And just in a couple of minutes, we are going to be talking with Zach Kreiser of Baseball Prospectus, who has noticed something about what Kyle Hendricks is doing. And I don't know if you had the chance to see his findings, Len, but Kyle Hendricks is not nibbling. He's attacking the strike zone in a way that he never has.
Yep.
Have you talked to him about it?
I haven't, but I did read Zach's piece and referenced it in the first inning last night, and he's right. And we noted a few fastballs that he threw right down the middle and got called strikes. And I think a lot of batters are still adjusting to that idea that they're looking for that pitch to kind of fade toward the corner. There's another part of this piece too, and he didn't write about it specifically, but you might want to ask him. I think Mike Petriello has noticed this. He is not getting the same calls at the bottom or below the strike zone than he did early in his career. And, you know, I know Zach referenced the fact that all of his pitches are higher than they used to be. I think Kyle is specifically working away from launch angle. But he's not getting that changeup at the bottom of the zone or that sinking fastball for a called strike like he did 2 or 3 years ago. And he's become a guy who likes elevation. And when you think of Kyle Hendricks and his long resume, you don't think of him as a guy who works up in the zone, but he has been that guy this year. It's pretty fascinating. And by the way, I hope he's an all-star. He's maybe the best starting pitcher in the game who hasn't been. And he's put together an all-star first half. And if he continues to do this over the next month, I think he'll be there in Cleveland.
Yeah, you exactly what you talked about, the low strike not getting called. You guys mentioned it on the broadcast last night. It was to one of the very few Astros right-handers that were in the lineup. It was a strike one pitch, which should have been, and wasn't called. I wonder then, do you get the sense that they've had to change, they being the battery or the pitching infrastructure, as they call it, that they've had to change the arsenal at all for Hendricks, or is it mostly just selecting the pitches in different spots and command?
Well, at times I think he's gone away from his changeup, and I think because of the elevated nature of his repertoire now, that's probably the last pitch you would want to throw a little higher in the zone, because that can really get whacked. Although I know he has on occasion, a very rare occasion, tried to elevate a changeup and throw it out of the strike zone to get a swing and a miss or just change the eye level. But in terms of his repertoire, it feels like he's thrown more curveballs on first pitches and generally for strikes. So I think the curveball was something he talked about in spring training. He wanted to utilize a little more often. But I just think that in general, he likes to now work up in the zone, and that's where a lot of pitchers have to live. And by the way, before we let you go, the Astros are really good.
Yeah.
They are really good. The Cubs did not face Justin Verlander. They didn't have to see Correa, Springer, Altuve. That's a really good ball club. And I'm sure the Twins might argue with this, but I'm not sure there's a better team on paper than the Houston Astros right now.
Len, thank you. Appreciate it. I know it was not an easy night for you. So here's to some more routine baseball games to be called.
I'm all for that. Thanks, guys.
That is Len Casper, brought to you by International Champions Cup. Get ready for soccer's first tournament of the year. July 16th, catch the International Champions Cup as AS Roma battles Chivas de Guadalajara right in their own backyard at SeatGeek Stadium. Get tickets at SeatGeek.com today. Zach Kreiser saw something that he thought was interesting about Kyle Hendricks, and he researched it, and he can tell us some of the specifics here about what Hendricks is doing and find out why he thought he saw what he thought he saw.
Hendricks sort of saved some bacon last night for the Cubs with their win over the Astros. We'll get to exactly how he's doing it next. Bernstein and McKnight, 670, the score.
Our guy was fantastic. He said eight innings. We needed that today. He told me when I took him out, I have enough left to go back out there. I explained to him two things. It's I have confidence in our bullpen, and I don't want to bring one of our guys into a bad inning. So say, for instance, the first guy gets on. He totally understood, but I appreciated his valor.
That's Joe Maddon. His team got a much-needed start from Kyle Hendricks last night. And this guy joining the Bernstein and McKnight show noticed something about Kyle Hendricks and wrote about it. He is Zach Kreiser. He's on Twitter at Z Kreiser. He is from Baseball Prospectus and Yahoo Sports. And he's with us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. Hi, Zach. What's going on?
Not much. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. How did you realize that Kyle Hendricks was doing something different? And what led you down the statistical and data rabbit hole to find out if it was right?
Sure. I'd been looking at, there are a ton of home runs being hit across baseball this year. And earlier in April, I had written kind of about some pitchers who were throwing basically nothing in the strike zone to try and avoid the areas where hitters hit home runs. And that's kind of when I was looking at those pitchers, I expected to see Kyle Hendricks among them. That's kind of what he's been doing for years, is he can put things with his command. He can put things on the outside of the zone or just around the edges and live there, and hitters can't make as good a contact with it. But I noticed he was actually on the entire opposite end. He was throwing the most strikes of any starter in baseball. He was pounding the zone more than anyone and had the highest number in what at BP we call called strike probability, which is it's basically a better way of explaining how often, if no one ever swung at his pitches, how often would they be called strikes?
Hmm.
How often is that ball landing in a spot where it should be a strike? And he's leading all starters. He's more than 54% of the time, which is usually, if you see someone up around that rate, it's because they are like a Max Scherzer or a Chris Sale, someone who can just throw it down the middle and people can't hit it anyway. That's kind of the type of pitcher who usually lands in that zone. So Hendricks is doing that. And I thought that was weird to start with, but he's really accelerated it into May, which as you noted, he's been terrific in May. I think a 1.81 ERA this month. And he's doing it a lot with efficiency. He's getting ahead of hitters and then kind of baiting them to put the ball in play or do something that they don't really want to do with a changeup or a sinker.
So a lot would say that Kyle Hendricks is getting away with throwing as many strikes as he is, given that he's not Scherzer or Sale with this stuff. Is he getting away with something here, or has he figured something out?
Yeah, I think you really hit on something. I think he's sort of getting away with it because people don't realize he changed. He didn't always do this.
You're ruining it for everybody, Zach. Now, come on, you're hurting the Cubs. How dare you?
It's possible, but I don't think hitters change that fast. I think they have seen him. Obviously, he's been a terrific pitcher, especially since his breakout in 2016. They're used to this way he operates. If you look at just across the league, hitters usually swing at about the same rate that the pitcher throws strikes. They have internalized this idea. They might not always swing at the right pitches, but they've got this idea of how often they're supposed to swing against a guy, whether it's, you know, the high end like a Scherzer or a Sale, or the low end like the person I wrote about, Luis Castillo for the Reds, doesn't throw it in the zone very much, and hitters know they probably shouldn't swing that much. With Hendricks, they're still stuck. They're not swinging very much, but he's putting 88 miles per hour right down the gut, and they're watching it go.
And hit 90 twice yesterday. I don't know if you saw the tweet from Darren Willman. Two pitches started with a 9 for Kyle Hendricks yesterday.
Which is him on a good day. You can get it up there. But it's, you know, that just shouldn't be a pitch that major league hitters are taking, and they're still being lulled to sleep by Hendricks. Now, whether that, you know, whether they adjust and go back, if there's any pitcher in the league that you would think could deal with that adjustment and keep them guessing, it's, you know, Hendricks is one of the top guys you would expect to be able to play that cat and mouse game well. So even if hitters start to adjust, he may decide that he'll go the other way and start making them swing at bad pitches. But for now, they haven't really adjusted. They're not even swinging at a league average rate. The league average rate's about 46%, and they're still a tick below that. So they're not swinging very much at him. He's getting ahead. And this is how you get those eight-inning, those really efficient starts, the 81-pitch shutout. You know, that is a product of this. He's only using about 3.5 pitches to get each out. And that is, that takes you a long way.
In order to do this for the month that he's done this for, you got to have a fairly solid defense. We've asked some questions about the Cubs' defense the last week or two. Are they turning batted balls into outs at a rate enough to keep Kyle Hendricks where he's been at?
Sure. I think he plays into it partially because he's using the sinker and the changeup, which are traditionally, they are pitches that you can get hits on. I think you saw in the first inning last night, the first hit he gave up to the Astros, it was a kind of a looping line drive that, it was kind of in no man's land. Almora, if he had made the play, it would have been a terrific play. But those are the types of hits sinkers and changeups give up. They're not the ringing double into the gap as often. They're not the homer that goes 500 feet. Those pitches, because they move horizontally, it's harder for hitters to understand that movement and get the bat in the right spot. So you tend to have these, you know, he'll give up hits. I think his BABIP this year is a little bit higher as he's focused more on that. It's more around league average, which is about 300. But his homers per nine is down, which is huge, and especially this year when so many more runs are scored on homers, he's still excelling at preventing those. As far as the actual defenders, I think obviously the Cubs are dealing with whatever is ailing Javi Baez and played him at third base, still waiting for Chris Bryant to come back to the field. So you have those. You have some of these defenders who are dealing with some nicks, but in terms of defensive talent, the Cubs definitely have enough talent to keep Hendricks going at this pace if he keeps doing what he's doing.
Talking with baseball analyst Zach Kreiser of Baseball Prospectus and Yahoo Sports on the Bernstein and McKnight Show on The Score. I wonder how this knowledge, this awareness and approach might be able to inform somebody like John Lester, who similarly doesn't have the velocity he used to have. He doesn't have exactly the same array of pitches, but he also is learning that he may be better off living a little bit higher in the zone where the barrels are less likely to be.
Yeah, and he's a tricky case because his pitches don't move arm side in the way that Hendricks does. You know, Hendricks has that sinker in the change, and when he throws it, the just natural way you expect a pitch to go is you expect it to sink a certain amount, and you expect it to go toward the pitcher's glove side, just as a natural motion. And Hendricks, they buck that convention. They go the opposite way more often than not, and that is kind of a visual trick for hitters. Lester works a lot on the other side. He has his fastball and his slider and his cutter, or curveball, whatever he wants to call it. They all move in the same direction, but then they change speeds and they break differently, which makes him good at what we call a BP tunneling, which is basically when a hitter decides to swing, John Lester makes it very difficult for them to tell which pitch it is they're swinging at because all of his pitches look the same for a certain amount of time between the time he releases and when they get to the plate. And so John Lester excels at that, but it can still give up some contact if you end up leaving that lower in the zone where hitters are putting those bat paths and launching things. So I think it's probably just an adjustment of mix for him. He's been doing it for a long time. He'll probably figure out how to make that work, but certainly if he could find a way to make the elevated fastballs play a little bit nicer with the breaking balls, you know, you have a better chance at getting some swings and misses there.
Great stuff, Zach. Thank you very much.
Hey, Zach.
Yeah, absolutely.
That is Zach Kreiser, Baseball Prospectus and Yahoo Sports. Bottom of the hour brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Nothing beats championship hockey. Your Chicago Wolves have advanced to the Calder Cup Finals. The Wolves host Charlotte next week for games 3, 4, and 5 at Allstate Arena. For playoff and ticket information, visit ChicagoWolves.com. When we come back, we got a chance to win $1,000 and want to revisit Joe Ostrowski's appearance with Mully and Haw, because what's going on with the Illinois potential gambling legislation that's now become this omnibus bill, it's changing by the hour, by the minute. The people involved in crafting it, what is in it, who is involved, it's getting large and more complicated, and nobody knows more about this stuff than Joe Ostrowski, who's in Springfield monitoring all of this. So you're going to get the very, very latest on it.
We'll get you the latest on the poll result as well. It's the Bernstein and McKnight Show, 670 The Score.
'Soon you're going to get a chance for a text keyword to win $1,000 cash, but Connor has results of the poll.
I do. It's 85% yes. We asked the question on Bernstein underscore MCK on Twitter whether you'd support taking netting all the way down to the foul line or not. 85% say yes. They would support that netting all the way down to the foul pole.
85%. You can look at that piece of paper that I set right there.
I wrote
there.
Down 73% would say yes. You wrote down 76% would say yes. We both shot it under just by a little bit there.
How many total votes did you say?
I don't have a total in front of me.
Was it like 1,200 or something like
that? Yeah, it's updated here in a second. But it's a good number. 85% in total. That's good. I'm glad to hear it. 1,500 votes.
Springfield is a buzz with activity, not just trying to legalize marijuana possession in Illinois, but also to find some way, and this is the deadline, they've got to do this now, find some way to be competitive with surrounding states when it comes to legal sports gambling, the scope of it, the size of it, and all the rules. And I don't know how they're going to get it done. I don't know if they're going to get it done. Joe Ostrowski of The Score, Joe O, the early odds broadcast and evenings. He knows more about it than we do. He was on the station earlier with Mully and Haw on The Score's morning show and gave a very complete latest update.
As usual with Illinois politics, things are taking a turn on a daily basis. Now, with just 2 days left before the end of the spring session, it came out at the end of the day yesterday that the lead negotiator on this sports betting bill has removed himself. State Rep Mike Zalewski, been a guest of this show.
Sure.
So the executives over at Rivers Casino, they're getting involved again. They were complaining because of Zalewski's other job, a lawyer at Taft Law Firm, representing dozens of clients with interest in gaming. So some felt that he was the problem. He said, okay, I'll just remove myself. So that is the latest as of yesterday. As far as a feel, well, it sounds like it's going to be a more comprehensive gambling bill here. It's not just going to be sports betting. What they're trying to get through here is an additional 6 casinos, a land-based casino in Chicago, Lake County, South Suburbs, Rockford, Danville, Williamson County, table games at racetracks, adding gambling seats at the existing 10 riverboat casinos in this state to go along with the sports betting bill.
The big issue, though, remains, or you tell me, the 18-month delay on mobile wagering. Is that still one of the things being discussed, and where does that stand?
Yeah, as of right now, that is still involved here. And you're right, David, that is the number one issue. If you were to ask me what's the most important aspect of getting a sports betting bill or some sort of a sports betting bill in the state, I'd say number one, you have to have mobile, you have to have online betting. And so they removed that penalty box for 3 years, keeping FanDuel and DraftKings out, and then they put this in for 540 days, which is a year and a half. So, but it's still the penalty box, basically, because you're blocking out DraftKings and FanDuel for the next year and a half. I hope there's an amendment in the next 2 days that removes this, because yes, you're right, Pritzker might get his license fees, his $200 million, but why limit yourself? We do everything on our phones right now. In New Jersey, 80% of bets are mobile or online. So is it really going to be a boon for the state over the next year and a half? Probably not. If you don't have online betting, sure, people may go on a Saturday and Sunday, enjoy a day of football at the racetrack or casinos if they have a sports book there, but you're limiting yourself completely in a state that desperately needs a lot of money.
This thing is changing. There's so many twists and turns. How are they going to get this legislation done if they keep changing it right up to the point where they're going to have to vote on it?
What I feel has been a little underreported about this bill, not only could you have licenses at casinos, racetracks, OTBs, if this bill goes through, this would be the first state in the country giving sports licenses to sports facilities, meaning when the Cubs are out of town, Bulls and Blackhawks, or nothing going on at the United Center, you could have events over at those facilities, and they would have betting at those events. So that's something to watch. That could be the big start of something. But as far as passing something in the next couple of days, some that I've heard speak, they think they're okay, especially now that the marijuana is taken care of. So the next 2 days, this is really going to be the focus. But there's some senators that have come out. Terry Link says this week, I look forward to making it happen this week, getting something on the governor's desk to sign in the near future. Senator Dave Syverson, he said, if we don't pass something, we're all in the penalty box. The bottom line is that we have to do this.
That's Joe Ostrowski, and he's monitoring the situation in Springfield as all this horse trading is going on.
Yeah, Saturday, the special broadcast for the Early Odds Show. It's 8:30 to 10 a.m. Our own Rick Camp is going to be here in studio. Joe will be live from Springfield, and regardless of what comes down the pipe and out the other side in the Illinois Senate, they'll have the latest for you Saturday morning.
Whatever happens, we're going to be talking about it Monday, and we're going to be in a special place. The Bernstein and McKnight Show is back at Smoke Daddy on Monday. And if you haven't come to join us at these things, it's really special. The food's great. It is a convivial and comfortable place to be.
You pack me a doggy bag?
Do join us there. Yeah, it's, Rich Campbell is going to be sitting in for Connor. We're going to lead off a day's broadcast at 9 a.m. Lawrence Holmes at noon. Cubs pregame with Zach Zaidman at 2:30 until first pitch. Get ready for the game with theScore and Xfinity, the exclusive Wi-Fi provider of Wrigley Field. Right now, it is time for your chance to win $1,000 in cash on theScore. This hour's keyword is pull. Text pull to 72881 by the end of the hour. Again, the keyword is pull to 72881. One randomly selected nationwide entrant from this hour will win. Please don't text and drive. Message and data rates may apply. Thanks to Len Casper and Zach Kreiser for being our guests today. Kevbo had the updates. Jay Zawoski, Rick Camp, Ray Diaz, the producers, Brian Gerch had the video feed. Tomorrow, Jessica Mendoza is going to join us.
It's going to have fun.
As will Jonah Carey, as will Joe Ostrowski. And more surprises, Rich Campbell sitting in tomorrow. Looking forward to having him along for the ride. Lawrence Holmes, we'll talk to him next on theScore.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly!